Welcome, everybody. You are listening to No Coast Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I am your host, Tom Hush, and of course, I am always joined by my co-host, Connor Cornelius.
Ho! Bring it in, Tom. Ooh, that hurts. That was nice. We're bringing in the action and the sensual, the sensuality.
We're super high energy.
We're dialing it in. Yeah. We got a great episode for you planned here.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We are so excited. Coming up in the next segment, we are going to be talking to Ruby Western and Kayla Ginsburg. They are the creators of a web series called Afternoon Snatch, and it focuses on a feminist queer magazine here in the city of Chicago. And it's just a great web series, just a short 6 episodes. But it is honestly, and I can speak for Connor here as well, one of the best series of its kind that we've seen out of the indie cinema sort of circuit. So we're going to be talking to them a little bit later about what that show is all about and how they're representing the queer community, the LGBTQA plus community in such a fun and interesting way. We also do our after credits sequence where we do a little segment called Missing Reels, where we talk to Ruby and Kayla about a couple of movies that they have never seen, but are kind of big in the pop culture, I don't know, zeitgeist, lexicon, right, canon, whatever you want to call it. We talked to them about a couple of movies that they have never seen. So stick around for that. But for right now, we've got our coming attractions segment where we talk a little bit about the business of cinema and what's going on in terms of cinema trends. And Connor, I think you have a pretty controversial story.
We've got some exciting news. Future presidential candidate Dwayne The Rock Johnson is filming his new, over the last couple of weeks, has been filming in Chicago for his new film, which is a soft reboot of a 1980s video game some of you might be familiar with, Rampage.
Woo. Now, that's the one with the big, giant kind of King Kong.
Yeah, you got the King Kong, you got the knockoff, maybe overweight Godzilla. And let's just be honest, streets are closing down and schools are closed all across America. Thank you, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, American hero.
I mean, in all honesty, though, I was actually here in the studio not that long ago, not today, but earlier this week, and we were treated to a completely empty Michigan Avenue with a low-flying helicopter camera and all, getting some, I guess, pickup shots or whatever, just getting some shots of the buildings.
Picking them up.
Getting some shots of the buildings that I guess are going to be digitally destroyed by a giant ape or lizard or something of that nature being chased by The Rock, who is
a formidable foe. I feel bad for the monsters.
Yeah, he is an enemy of evil everywhere.
Yep, those monsters are going to be between a rock and a hard place. That's
true,
for sure.
True. But we do have another story coming out of Sony Pictures. Now, they have never been known to be great at navigating the film industry.
Footnote, see The Amazing Spider-Man franchise.
Yeah, see The Amazing Spider-Man. See a lot of franchises that they kind of tried to
champion,
you know, tried to make a thing. But they have been in a lot of financial heat over the last couple of years. They're really not doing very well. No one knows what's going to happen to Sony, but they've decided, why not put another nail in the coffin and start releasing what they're calling clean versions of some of their films. Connor, can you tell us a little bit more?
Yep. So if you've ever been on a really long flight or anything, you might notice that some of the movies are edited, or if you watch maybe an R-rated film on television, maybe a little bit of it is edited. Jeez.
Edited.
Maybe a little bit of them are edited for maybe younger eyes. But what Sony is doing is now they are giving you the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to finally be able to purchase cut-for-TV films. You'll be able to spend as much money as you want on, I think they have 24 titles.
Ranging from like Spider-Man, you can get the clean version of Spider-Man and Captain Phillips, the Tom Cruise biopic.
Looking at this list here, it is truly bizarre. They've got like cinematic masterworks like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and then they have Grown Ups 2. They have the entire Grown Ups canon. It's and of course
the Grown Ups cinematic universe,
Grown Ups mythos.
And it's just, you know, if that wasn't ridiculous enough that you can now finally purchase the formatted for TV version.
Finally.
They have drawn the ire of professional white stoner Seth Rogen and his boss, Judd Apatow.
His longtime boss. And they have been pretty outspoken about this, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. They have. They've had some really harsh words, very harsh words for Sony Pictures, and that's because I believe Judd Apatow, a few of his films were released through Sony Pictures, and same thing with Rogan, and director Adam McKay as well, very upset with this. They're basically just saying, I quote from Seth Rogen, "Holy shit, please don't do this to our movies. Thanks." Judd Apatow was also very critical, tweeting that the company would get hell for the initiative. And frankly, I think they deserve it. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, and if you've ever questioned the influential power of these people or Twitter, Sony's backpedaled. They said that they will not release clean versions of the films if the original filmmakers are against it. And it seems as though we're not going to be getting a clean version of Super Jaime. Or what was that? Your Highness?
Your Highness.
Danny McBride and James Franco.
Oh,
I don't know if that was actually Sony.
I know Talladega Nights is on that list. A few different properties that...
So if Adam McKay's against it...
No,
they're not going to
do it. And the whole thing just kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because I understand the necessity for cut for TV or cut for in-flight entertainment films, because you don't know who's going to be watching at any given time. So you have to cut out some of the things. Sometimes you have to edit it for time. Sometimes you literally have to edit for aspect ratio.
But the reasoning behind that is because it's temporary, right? You're on an airplane and then you will reach your destination, or you are just sitting down and watching television. Eventually you're going to go to bed, or eventually you're going to get up and leave. You're not tied. Maybe not. I'm certainly not as emotional tied to these movies in that sort of a setting.
Yeah. So when you're buying something for home media, why would you get the clean version?
Is the rationalization from these?
Essentially, the reasoning behind this is that they just want more people to see more films, and just like, oh, well, we want to give the opportunity for a wider audience to enjoy the, you know, intellectual pursuit that is Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby. Now, don't get me wrong, that is a great movie, and I think it's a very funny movie, but it doesn't work without the raunchiness. It's kind of the point.
It's Will Ferrell and Adam McKay.
Yeah, this is what they do, smart, dumb comedy.
Yeah.
And if you don't want your kids watching that type of movie, don't let them watch that type of movie. If it's on TV, it's already cut for TV. Why would you buy the clean version?
Why would you buy it? That's what I don't get.
That's the part that's really contentious. Why would you pay more? Because as the common idea was the unrated cut that you would get on the DVD. You're paying for the DVD because you get the full thing, you know, and often including an unrated cut that had even more naughtiness in there. So now you're going to buy the sanitized. It's the complete opposite way of thinking, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, for a number here, Step Brothers, an R-rated comedy, they pull 23 instances of violence, and they pull 152 instances of bad language and 91 of sexual content. So what is left in the film? What, they arrive and call each other Nighthawk and then it ends? Is that
I mean, but you're right. You're absolutely right. There's no sense to it. Oh, this reminds me of back... there were versions of E.T. where they went back and changed the police officers that were holding guns to holding walkie-talkies.
Walkie-talkies, yeah.
Yeah, famously parodied in South Park, but that was a real thing that they did. That was not a joke. They did that in one of the versions of the film that was released on home media. And I don't know. It's just like, really? This is your solution to having bad content in films, instead of putting the onus of responsibility on the parent or whoever the guardian is, you know? And at the same time, kids are just going to see certain things, and you might have to explain to them that, yeah, people say bad words sometime, and there's some naughty humor, you know? Just
there's a little bit of education inherent in filmmaking, in a film-watching experience, mm-hmm. and sounds like Sony is trying to maybe lessen that a little bit.
I suppose so. I learned everything I know from movies.
Yep, I think I did too. Let me think.
Yeah. I watched 1984, so that's how I know that 2 plus 2 equals 5.
Yeah. Mm.
And that's universal
Double plus
truth.
Ungood is the same thing as saying right. bad.
Uh-huh.
I am really hard-pressed to think of anything that I know that Damn. Isn't pulled straight from that I can't back up with a reference.
Yeah. So, Sony, stop tampering with our children's education.
You know what, Sony? I got some words for you. Grow the hell up.
Yes. We're going to put the Noco Cinema stamp of grow the hell up yep. onto Sony Pictures. I think the whole thing is that they're just in dire financial straits, and they're just like, we need to drum up something Maybe to sell movies.
Start rebranding ourselves as more of a family company or something.
Who knows? Who knows?
Certainly not us.
Certainly not us. Although, if Sony,
come on the show.
Come on the show. Let's talk about this. Or hire us as executives, and we'll totally run your company and straight into the sky.
Listen, I've got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Hire me on as a just slap CEO under my name.
Boom.
And then just watch start them. Raking it in.
Yeah, watch the money roll.
See what happens, baby.
Oh, yeah. My God. All right. So, like we said, next up, we're going to be talking to Ruby Western and Kayla Ginsberg, creators of Afternoon Snatch, and that's going to be in our feature presentation segment. You are listening to Noco Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. Sony, grow the hell up. More after this. Back, everybody. You're listening to Noco Cinema here on WGM Plus, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I am your host, Tom Hush, joined again, as always, by my host, Connor Cornelius. How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for that sterling introduction. How are you doing today?
I'm a little verklempt.
Back from the break?
Yeah, back from the break. I'm blushing because we have such great guests today, and I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, who are these people?
Oh my gosh. These are two people who are making a fantastic web series. Now, this is a show that focuses on cinema. It's Noco Cinema. We look at cinema. However, we want to broaden that definition of cinema because it would be so unfair to eliminate, different forms of art, the visual art, the filmmaking art, simply because it's not presented in the way that we think of cinema.
And there is something strongly cinematic about this show.
Absolutely. So this is a web series. It's called Afternoon Snatch, and it's an unapologetically queer web comedy about heartbreak and the importance of community. And the reason we're putting this in the cinema category is because we're not talking about a series. This isn't Cheers, okay? Gone are the days of multi-camera sitcoms all taking place in one location. Television and web series, syndicated storytelling uses a lot more cinematic elements to it. It's single camera. They're framing the shots like it's a movie. It's a story being told with beginning, middle, and end like a movie. However, it's just got that nice, long, syndicated feel to it. And like I said, Afternoon Snatch, right now we have the creators of this fantastic show, which is available on open.tv, which is a platform that they're going to talk a little bit about that hosts shows like Afternoon Snatch. Please welcome to the program Ruby Western and Kayla Ginsberg, creators of Afternoon Snatch. How are y'all doing today?
Hey.
So verklempt.
So
had me blushing.
Yes. It's going around.
Seriously. It's just one of those days, I guess.
Yes.
We're so excited to all be together. And Connor and I recently watched this series. It's 6 episodes, all available on Open TV. And we just have to say we absolutely love it. It is one of the most almost addictive. For 6 episodes, you get quickly addicted to
this. Yeah, the only thing that I found myself wishing that that there was more of was more content.
Yeah.
You know, I wish there were just more episodes.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
These headphones aren't going to fit by the end of this.
Oh.
So big.
Hey, that's what we're here for, because we can't get enough of Afternoon Snatch. So, Ruby. Yeah. And that's so good. That's the best part about it. So, Ruby and Kayla, co-creators of Afternoon Snatch, can you tell us a little bit about where the idea for the show came from?
Yeah.
Sure thing.
It was really amalgamation of our brains, I feel like. We were both interested in different things, and we smashed them together and created Afternoon Snatch. Ruby was in a state at the time.
I was. I mean, this whole show is about, like, right after a breakup, and that is where I was. And so I wrote, I was like, I'm going to make some art about this. And I made, like, an 8-minute short film script that I showed to Kayla that was supposed to be like this really dramatic, moving piece about like two people in a shower, like talking it out, you know? And it was like, I love you as well. Will you touch my butt? Okay, I miss you already. And I showed it to Kayla and she's like, oh, this is pretty funny. And I was like, bitch, this is not a comedy. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyhow, so we moved on from that terrible situation, but she was like, we can make something out of this. And then we did.
Yeah, we took like the first word and like scrapped everything else.
So it started out as a short film originally.
Yes.
And a drama.
And a drama.
So now we have a comedy web series.
Yeah.
So with you wrote the original piece that will become Afternoon Snatch. Who writes now? Do you write together? Do you come from different stories and you're just like, let's see what we can make from this?
Right. We totally storyboarded the whole thing together. And then I did like a skeleton draft, and then Kayla edited. And she had done this thesis about like lesbian sex magazines, and she had all this really wonderful knowledge to put in there about what it would be like to work in an office like that.
Yeah, I wanted the historical jokes to really come through. And so that was like my main goal, is like getting some off our backs jokes. Anyway, yeah.
And Kayla remains the only one in the room who gets those jokes.
Yeah, so that was like where I was coming from, where I was like really excited about lesbian queer magazines and what that would sort of look like now if a queer lesbian all-encompassing magazine could really survive in print, which...
At this moment in time,
which is... probably not possible. I can't think of any examples that really remain in print, which is sad. So that was sort of the like utopia that we were dreaming up. And that was the part of my brain that I smashed with Ruby's.
For sure.
So it's like breakup magazines, Afternoon Snatch.
Here it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we back and forth those drafts over and over and over.
Yeah. Ruby definitely did most of the writing. And we just edited the fuck out of them.
Mostly like, Kayla took out my Christopher Walken impressions that I attempted to put in there.
Was there any left?
There were so many when we started.
Is it a shame?
I don't know. I would have
loved
to see.
You should do it right now.
I did think it right now. That was kind of one of the things that I was missing maybe a little bit in Afternoon Snatch.
Absolutely.
I could have done some more impressions.
Yep. You can blame me.
More walking.
Go ahead, Kyle.
So it sounds like it came very organically, the idea for this show, and it sounds like you two working together comes very organically. How long really did it take to get to the show that we have now?
Right.
From first conception, to just continue the birth metaphor, like 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. We started writing together and thinking together in like August of
2013?
14?
14.
14.
Okay.
I think. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's the one we're going for?
Yeah. And wrote for like 6 months as I was applying to grants and doing more like development stuff.
We filmed to 2015.
Yeah.
And then...
Summer of 2015.
Yeah. And then we were editing and we found Open TV, this amazing platform. And then they had an opening like the next year on their schedule. So that's we took another year.
Yeah, which actually ended up being faded. I think that year really helped flesh out the editing and all of the other parts that I think would have been a lot more rushed. So it was a long process. I mean, tiny indie, tiny budgeted things are really a labor of love, so it's mostly like mostly, just takes your time to do.
Mostly Kayla's time. It takes mostly Kayla's time.
Now, Ruby, you play Annie.
I do.
In the series, so you are the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, this came from a story that dealt with your own personal life, your own personal emotions, and your own breakup. How does it feel to be playing through this in a, you know, kind of fictional but also not so fictional setting?
Right.
That's a really good question.
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting thing because of this time frame that, like, while we were writing it, I was, like, you know, balled up Kleenex on the table, like, drinking beer at inappropriate times of day while we were writing. And then by the time we actually filmed, I was kind of like, A-okay, and, like, dating someone else and, like, doing my thing in Chicago. So it felt, A, great to be like, oh, look how far away I am from that, like, barking in the shower situation. Yeah. And also it was, like, it was good to reconnect with that feeling and think about, like, how much progress I had made in the world.
Totally.
And so,
which is so much. You made so much progress.
Yeah. Kayla, so affirming.
So did you find that working through kind of getting to play this character, did you think that it, I guess it did take a long time, right, for the final product to finally happen, but did you find yourself using that as a way to sort of work through the initial reason for writing it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely helped me reconnect with that time in my life.
I think, and the writing process was really...
That was the biggest cathartic bit, for sure. Some, like, little barbed mean lines about people that we eventually took out. Yeah, it was good. That was very important. The acting itself was truly just, like, a joyous experience. Everyone there was so delightful.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about the
crew. Oh, my goodness. Yes, everyone was so great. We had a great time. We had a really, really, really lovely time.
That's great.
Yeah, it seems like a labor of love, and you definitely get that kind of vibe of, it seems like that these people all genuinely like to be around one another when you're watching the show.
Great.
So let's talk about the cast, though.
Yeah.
So these characters are, I'm just going to go ahead and say, these are not characters that normally would be captured in maybe a network TV setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, because they are gems.
Right? Yeah, and there is something, despite that, there is something universally relatable about watching your film or watching your episodes. What was the what was sort of the genesis of some of the characters? I really enjoyed Sheila's character, sort of the, like, uninformed feminist that you're sort of learning about these issues that the characters are going through, right, through her a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. So Sheila is actually played by the amazing Maura Kinney, who is my best friend in the whole world. We're actually platonic life partners. We had a commitment ceremony a couple years ago, committing to queer family forever, and our relationship is very beautiful and meaningful. And she also went to DePaul Theater School and is this fabulous, hilarious mm-hmm. actor. And I do think really that character, I think, created a sort of, like, route for people to enter into the story if they were feeling unsure about the identities or feelings or whatever that was being portrayed. I think she is, like, a really good character usage person.
Yeah,
tunnel.
She's a tunnel bridge. Yeah, something like that to get in there, for sure. And I think we wanted this to be educational but not PSA-y,
right?
You know, like, there were, like, a few things that we really wanted to talk about relatively explicitly and have it not be like, pause, and then, like, someone shuffles in and is like, pronouns are important. Ask your friends.
A very special episode of Afternoon Snack.
The glossary.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was definitely a tool for that.
Yeah, I think in creating the characters in the setting, are, like, most important, most sort of, like, the forefront goal was to reflect our community that mm-hmm. we have and create something that, like, celebrated that community and portrayed it really unapologetically. Mm-hmm. But we also wanted it to be relatable to everyone else. And, like, so first and foremost is the queer community loving it. Second, and also very important, is making sure that other people can understand it and appreciate it and hopefully learn something. So that was sort of our hierarchy of goals.
Yeah, and I would say that all those goals are accomplished. Obviously, I cannot speak for... I can't imagine how you'd find someone that doesn't love something about this. I love every part of it, but...
Oh, my God.
It's, yeah. You're listening to Gush Fest here on No Coast.
You're on Gush Radio.
With Afternoon Snatch. Get it? Yeah.
And with the characters, a large theme of this show is identity and exploring one's own identity and engaging in other identities. What was it like writing these characters and making them so distinct? Like, you know who Annie is, you know who Skye is, and there's not this kind of overlap of, hey, these are what all, this is just the queer community, everybody's kind of the same. They feel like they are totally their own people. How did you accomplish getting that distinct, well-rounded characters into the show?
Well, something that first comes to mind for me is that when we were first writing, we were actually going to do this, like, very cool spy movie-esque thing where...
What?
Yeah, remember where, like...
Was I high when we were doing
this? This is news to one of the creators.
Spy? What?
Where we, like, pause it and across the screen rolls,
oh,
like...
I thought you meant the entire thing was like...
No.
Okay, no. Okay. Holy shit. I was so worried.
I love how you characterize that.
I don't even know. Yeah, where basically it was like... screen pause, Sheila, 19 or whatever. Sheila's not 19.
No, Julie's not. So it would
19.
Be like age, pronouns, like a little something about them, and then it would resume. Yes.
Yeah. And so that was sort of, I think, we wrote those sort of 5-word descriptors early on because mm-hmm. we thought that was going to be like the coolest effect ever. And then we didn't do it. but that, I think, helped root the characters. We were like, okay, like everything relates back to this person is, like, for example, Julie, the boss, she's 19, she's badass.
That was a joke I thought was so funny.
I was unsure.
And, it's but... kind of like you're on our backs, whatever.
In retrospect, I mean, now that it's done, I think it's fucking hilarious too. So
anyhow,
first
yeah. So it definitely helped to write those like quick little abstracts on these characters. And thinking about like a fruit salad, you don't want everything to be a melon. You know, you got to have something citrusy in there. And oh god, this is taking a turn.
But what you said, what you said about rooting the characters, though. So instead of in lieu of having these kind of title cards come in, you allowed the characters to kind of, those title cards came out just in their actions and in their dialogue, and it felt very natural. So that was a great decision. I mean, it was good to have those title cards ready to go, but I remark every time watching the show about how you don't need someone to tell you what's happening. As you said, Ruby, with the, it's not a PSA. This is, you are watching it happen in a very realistic way. Do either of you have any sort of acting or cinematic experience prior to this? I know you mentioned that, Ruby, you went to a drama camp with one of our other guests, Jake Wiseman, mm-hmm. for a while. So
lucky
you have a little bit of the acting bug, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I do stand-up comedy and I do theater acting, but this
Excellent.
Is my first film anything.
Yeah, and I was doing more film production and did film production for a couple years. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the whole 3-year process. I was doing film production, and then as soon as Afternoon Snatch came out, I retired at the tender age of 24 or whatever. So yeah, I had a little bit of film experience. I'd PA'd on a few things, and I mm-hmm. Was working with someone, Eugene Sun Park, who created Full Spectrum Features, which is a really cool experimental alternative film nonprofit. And he was interested in web series, and I was interested in web series, and I was like, Ruby, let's make a web series.
Okay, sure.
yeah, so I had been doing film production for a little bit and then really learned just like so much while doing Afternoon Snatch.
Yeah, Kayla just jumped into the deep end.
Accidentally.
Kayla did so much work.
Yeah, it was great. I ended up learning every aspect because I did every aspect mm-hmm. from start to finish, which was awesome. With a ton of people. I mean, I didn't do everything, obviously. Mm-hmm. We had so many people working with us, and we collaborated throughout the entire thing. But I felt really lucky that I got to, like, learn a little bit about development, learn a little bit about grant writing, learn a little bit about editing, learn a little bit about producing just by...
Get the craft services on the way to set.
Yeah. Just by doing it all. Yeah, so that was fun.
Yeah.
So one of the things about this show that really strikes me is it's certainly indie, but it's also got a very professional, sleek look to it. How were the shots? How did the shots come about? Who was the cinematographer for this?
Yeah, so a friend of mine who I'd worked with on a couple of other indie things, Grace
Pizzula.
Oh my god,
Let's
that was awesome.
That.
Yeah. Was the DP, and she was amazing. She was so great. I like as soon as we started developing, I was like, I want Grace. I love her eye. And she also worked with our second camera, Drew Montag, who I'd also worked with before, who was also fantastic. And they both have very sleek, very like, almost like a slight vintage edge, I would say, to their filmmaking styles, but just like really clean and so beautiful. So I felt really lucky to have them both.
For sure. And I mean, we were trying to work with as many like queer and women people behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, we wanted the like world that we created to be reflected on and off screen. Mm-hmm. So most of the crew, most of the cast, and then of course like the characters are mostly queer, mostly women, mostly beautiful.
That's true. Everybody in this, as Connor said, the cinematography is fantastic. The writing is fantastic. Everything, the acting, so naturalistic and so much fun. I actually want to play a little clip here from my personal favorite episode of The Six. It's from Due Dates, which, apart from the great pun, it took me like 5 minutes to get. I was like, how do you say that again? Duh dates?
Oh my God.
Did you not get that?
I did not get that.
That was due dates.
Oh my God.
Me making these sleeper jokes for Kayla Gensler.
I can't believe, because I speak French. I was like, yeah, two dates. Like, duh. Again, after the snatch, surprising me over and over again.
Exactly.
The gift that keeps on giving.
We're all learning.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I'm going to play
That's
a little
so
clip
smart,
here from the portion of the episode where it's kind of intercutting between the two dates that are happening here. And I just really like so much of this.
Well, Julie Zond, I know this wasn't the most sparkly evening of conversation.
I thought it was fine.
Oh, well, I just want to take responsibility. It was weird. I don't feel like myself. Just went through a really bad breakup. So.
I completely understand. Did Julie tell you I'm recently divorced?
No. Are you okay?
Working on it. Every day's a challenge.
Yeah.
But you know what's really helped me?
What?
Sex.
Okay.
Lots of sex.
Oh my goodness.
So, what do you say?
About what? Well, let me put it like that. Yeah.
So to preface that portion of it, that was after a date that was going pretty poorly up to that point, I suppose. You texted out, please help. And up to that point, the cameras are cutting between, or the shots are cutting between your date and Sky's date. With Sheila, and they're just the way that it juxtapose the both of them is so funny. With your date going so poorly, and Sky's date going better, I guess, you know,
for sure, steamier.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Like, oh my gosh,
they both got to the same place if you think about it. That's so.
Exactly. And I loved in that particular portion just the way Ruby that you like played the awkwardness was so much fun, because you're just like, I want this to happen, but also this is so sudden. This is it was great, but just an example of when the writing and the cinematography and everything came together to make a really, really funny scene. One of the things that I appreciate about this episode was the frankness with which you talk about sex, and that it's like, it's a key component to people's relationships, sort of. So could you tell me about how you chose to go about this episode exploring your character's sex lives?
Well,
that's a really good question.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way that Kayla and I both live in the world, if I may make
Please
such
do.
A grand sweeping statement, among
Excited
many
to
other
hear
things,
how I live in the world.
is like an incredibly sex positive like way that we speak to humans just in general in the world. Like the way that I speak with my friends within my community is very, very frank and very open, and like my
Absolutely.
Group text threads would not be allowed anywhere. You know, there it's very explicit. So I think that we wanted to reflect that openness and not, I don't know, I don't think, I just didn't want to be subtle in the way that we talked about sex at
Absolutely.
All, because that's not the way that I talk about it.
But at the same time, I would call this show kid friendly. Like, there's no explicit nudity. There's no, like, I think the sex scenes are very tame and mostly humorous. And I think that the way that sex and sexuality is talked about is really sex positive and I think totally shareable with, I would say, any age. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Hmm. What do you think, Ruby?
This is not a Y7 show.
Show it to your kid. Yeah.
At what age can you start showing? Can you start showing children like lingerie and stuff? You know.
I mean, it's a great question, but also like they see it fucking everywhere. Like,
yeah.
I would say compared to the world that we live in, our show was very tame.
And it's a much more. It's such a loving perception of sex and sexual relationship because the emphasis is on the relationship part of it and how emotional of an experience it is for all the characters, even with jokes. I wish our listeners could see this because a lot of the sex portion has to do with one character in like a fox costume
being
crawling around. Crawling around on the floor. One of the roommates walking, just like having cereal. Like it's and even afterwards, something that it is played for humor, but it has a real emotional component, is the fact that Annie cries three times during the experience. But it's a humorous moment because you're thinking, all you know, poor Annie having this kind of faux pas. But also, I felt true. I don't know. I felt so like. Empathetic and felt so much for Annie because, oh, imagine that, having your first sexual experience after such a bad breakup. So, you know, just a big up to being able to play both of that for humor and this kind of subtle emotional character driven moment for Annie.
Yeah. And for me, that scene also is like, I feel a lot of empathy for Julie's aunt. Like,
right.
Julie's aunt is just like trying to get laid and Annie is going through this intense emotional process. And I think it was also important for us to show that like, emotions happen during sex and you don't have to hide them and like you just have to communicate about them and showing that like all kinds of things happen during sex and that's normal and great.
We're all on our own journeys and sometimes we're naked at the same time.
Absolutely.
Wow. I'm going to get that tattooed. Yeah, I'm going to get that on a t-shirt. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to say to go back to a couple of things that you touched on is I think that the reason why, to me, I think the reason why the characters feel really natural and the emotions feel really natural is because so many of the actors were like are part of the queer community and all over the like in Chicago and other places. And I think that the characters like it felt they sort of embody the characters so well and so incredibly, partly I think because they're people that we know. They're people like the characters are people that we know. The characters are an amalgamation of all kinds of our queer friends and communities and lovers. And so I think that familiarity to us was also a familiarity to the cast. And that's why partially also their incredible talent is why that comes across as I think emotionally real.
And that's probably why Tom and I are capable of gushing so much about this, because the, you know, the casualness through which all of you guys seem to be interacting, it really brings the watcher in. It really brings the viewer in. And I think, Tom, you mentioned something earlier about Roger Ebert's quote about empathy in film. And it's, I think that even if somebody was relatively unaware of the queer community, I would think they would be hard pressed to not feel some sort of empathy through just even watching the first episode.
Yeah, you're stepping into a world of friends. As you mentioned, I mean, these are really your friends. This is your community, and you're representing it in such an honest way, and to a point where, as a viewer, I felt like I got to step into it and be a guest and learn and see and be. Be a part of it to whatever extent you know a viewer can be a part of it. So that's what I think wants us to watch so much more of it, is that it's the same thing that got you with more typical being the wrong word probably, but sitcoms that have come before like Friends or Cheers or whatever. You get to step into this genuinely loving, caring friend group that just it puts a big smile on one's face.
On
the face.
What a huge compliment.
Yeah. Queer cheers.
Queer cheers.
Queer cheers.
Queer cheers. Queer cheers. Queer cheers to queers.
Are there plans for a second season, a second series?
No. if only. It just, like, we, like, are so, let me speak for both of us for a moment, okay. Are so proud of Afternoon Snatch and, like, love this show so much. And it also did take 3 years, and we have, like, other creative practices, other creative interests that we're pursuing. And I think for me, especially by the end, I realized that I, like, loved the content and I didn't necessarily love the entire process of filmmaking, which is so intensive and in so many different ways. And I was sort of leaving the commercial filmmaking industry and just feeling like I'm going in a new direction, and Ruby's going in new directions and is what are you pursuing, Ruby?
Well, I think that eventually what I came to with this is that there are other stories of, like, more marginalized people that I think need to be told more. Like, I think that I feel so good about this and, like, how we brought in a lot of conversations and representations of different gender experiences and identities, but I don't know, like, racially, I don't think that we did, like, racially diverse, like, our racial diversity was not what I would love to happen. And also, this was a story of, like, a cis white woman who, like, had a hard time and is totally fine. And so, like, in projects that I'm working on in the future, I think that I want to, like, help other, like, be an assisting role in people telling stories that I think need more space, because that story can be told and has been told so many times.
Yeah. I mean, I also think, though, that, like, we started writing almost 4 years ago now, and, like, that story, Afternoon Snatch, that story then, I think, was really, really vital, and to me is still really, really vital. Like, I think the narrative that, you, like, finding community after a breakup instead of finding a new romantic partner is a really powerful one and a really important one. And I do also think that, like, it would be very different if we were writing it now. It would be a very different story. And so I think to some extent it's funny to have seen it come out in 2017 because we wrote it in 2014, 2015, and that does feel like a very different world and a very different place.
Yeah, and the narratives change a little bit over, you know, they change over time. Things just change, and you know, it is, I guess, the nature of the beast that it took y'all so long to make it. But it seems like that's just indie filmmaking. But right. I will say, I think I can speak for Connor as well, that we're excited to see literally whatever comes next, whatever the next story you want to challenge.
So great. I do stand up comedy, so if you ever
where can we catch you doing stand up?
Yes, where, Ruby? She's never let me come to a show.
Is that true?
Never,
yes.
Let
or never let.
I put it on the internet.
Oh, well, then I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
Before it was let, and then it wasn't.
Yeah,
attention.
There was a while where I just wanted to do it alone and not ever have to talk to anyone after that I ever knew. I'm doing, I don't know when this comes out, but on the 21st, I am performing at Rogers Park Social, Laughs in the Lounge.
That's oh my God, I love Rogers Park Social.
It's such a good bar.
It's great. I used to live in Rogers Park. I've recently left Rogers Park, literally within the last week, but Rogers Park, great place to be.
So good. And the bartender there on Wednesday nights is Rolo Rodriguez, who played Andy.
I didn't know that he was bartending.
Yeah,
there.
He is at the Rogers Park Social. God.
Well, if you as you should make a pilgrimage to Rogers Park Social, do it for Afternoon Snatch so you can meet one of these fantastic people. And
two
hopefully,
of them.
Yeah, two of them.
Are you going to go?
No, I mean, Rolo's there. Uh-oh. I mean, I
no,
might go
no,
to maybe
I'm not,
three.
Maybe, yes.
Maybe three.
Afternoon Snatch reunion 2017. It's great. Yeah. Can you tell us just really quickly about the experience of working with Open TV?
Yes.
Yeah.
Would love to.
Amara came along really at a moment where we were, I think, floundering in the process.
Right. We're like, do we put this on YouTube? Do we just, like, put it on VHS tapes and throw it off a bridge? Like,
what do we do? And Amara came along with this incredible platform that I had known about for probably a year. Actually, I met my girlfriend on a show that is also on Open TV called Full Out, which was made by Julie Keck and Jess. No.
That's a different person.
I know them really well. This is so embarrassing. Fink. No. Oh my God. Look them up. Jess and Julie. They are part of King is a Fink. They are amazing. Jess King. Duh. I don't know. Can you cut that out?
We can edit that in post.
Great. Yeah.
Copy.
Anyway, so yeah, Full Out, that's where I met my girlfriend. That was also on Open TV, so I knew of the platform for a year and was so enamored of the work that Amar was doing.
Yeah, so and it started as work he was doing at Northwestern, and now it's like become this amazing
hub.
Like, yeah. And it's wow, that was a nice little stutter. Excuse me. So he's highlighting work made by queer people, cis women, and people of color. And so it's like holding up these populations that like don't have these platforms in general and just putting them all in this one place. And there's so much good work on there.
There's so much.
So much good work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had seen, I mean, we're all sort of in the same places often. So I'd seen Amar a few times and hadn't had the courage to go talk to him. And so finally I was like, hi, my name's Kayla. I have this show. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, Afternoon Snatch. I want to talk to you about it. And I was like, oh, my God. He's already up on it. Like, I've never felt so seen. It was just so great. So then we talked for a few months and we're like, yes.
Got on there. Yeah, and we premiered alongside two amazing web series they put out last year, Brujos and Brown Girls, which please check those out. They're both absolutely amazing. Brown Girls just got slated for an HBO.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They just got a development deal. So right on.
Amazing. Ooh. Yeah.
You are amazing.
Yes. So Open TV. Wow. If you're gonna watch anything online and you want, which you probably will
at some point.
I mean, I traded in my tube TV for a Windows 98 computer. Hopefully, it runs Open TV.
Nice.
You can find that over at www.weareopen.tv, and it's got Afternoon Snatch. It's got so many other great shows and. It's Chicago based, and it's an open platform for queer and intersectional television. Pardon, and that's where you're going to find Afternoon Snatch. So many other great shows. Ruby and Caleb, will you stick around with us for just a little bit longer? And we're going to talk about some. We're going to talk a little bit more general movies, but will you stick around a little bit?
Yeah.
Our pleasure.
All right. Excellent. So, again, that's Ruby Western and Kayla Ginsburg, creators of Afternoon Snatch. You can find that over at weareopen.tv. We'll be back in just a moment to do a new segment, Connor. A new, very new segment.
Brand new.
We're dusting it off. Yeah, we're dusting it off just for Ruby and Kayla. It's called Missing Reels. All this and more. No, it's really just that.
That's it. And that'll be it.
That will be the show.
And more.
That's all coming up next on NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. Welcome back, everybody. You are still listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. All around the world. We are professionals here at NoCo Cinema, and we just want you to know that right off the bat. We have been talking to Ruby Western and Kayla Ginsburg, who are the creators of a web series called Afternoon Snatch. Fantastic web series. You got to watch it. It's just 6 episodes, but it's a lifetime of entertainment. I'm ready to watch it again. I'm so ready to watch it all the way through again. You can find it over at weareopen.tv. You've got the whole series there in addition to a bunch of other great series. Thank you so much for coming on the program again, Ruby and Kayla.
Thank you for having us.
No problem. And last but not least, my best friend and worst enemy.
I don't know whether to hit you or hug you, Tom.
Exactly.
But that's actually fine. I'm over here watching episode 3 of Afternoon Snatch, so if I seem a little quiet, it's just because I, you know, don't bother me. I'm binge watching right now.
I'm busy. All right, so for our after credit sequence this time, we are going to be doing a little segment we concocted called Missing Reels. There are tons of movies out there that are considered famous or part of the pop culture zeitgeist that we haven't seen. We kind of missed out on. Either we were too young or just never really got around to it. And we posed this question to Ruby and Kayla about what movie that they haven't seen that is kind of like this big deal but just never got around to it. Ruby, I'd like to start with yours. What is your missing reel?
I attempted to watch The Godfather in its entirety.
Oh, and emphasis on the word attempt.
Yeah, where's the attempt?
I tried.
And well, then?
And then?
Not so much.
No, not so much. So to preface this, like, there was a television in my house growing up, but we had a couple channels. I did not have a lot of screen time. I have missed out on so many movies. And so, you know, canonical movies I have seen. What have I seen? I've seen Fiddler on the Roof a lot of times.
Well, that's
like that's what I got going for me. So, but The Godfather, you know, is referenced everywhere all the time.
Right.
It's like, okay, I know there's a horse head situation.
Yeah, so
like,
many fun childhood pranks.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't get it.
So I was like, okay, we'll do this. Yeah, and I watched it with someone that I just started dating, and I mean, it starts with this like story of an attempted rape, and then the only people of color in it are the help, and that's in the very beginning, and then there's blatant racist statements throughout, and eventually I decided I would rather be making out with somebody than watching this movie.
What were your expectations going in? Because as you mentioned, it's referenced all the time. It's considered one of these titans of American cinema, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, Al Pacino, like eventually Robert De Niro gets into the mix in part two. Mm-hmm. What were your notions of the film before you even sat down and watched it?
I was ready to watch a movie that included a severed horse head, that had a lot of violence that I could like gird my loins for. I was prepared for it to be very long and have some interesting family dynamics. I guess I was pretty open to whatever filled in the spaces between those four pillars of whatever. One thing I did like was how tender these men were with each other, like kissing each other on the face and stuff.
Yeah.
That was sweet.
Very, very old school Italian.
Yeah.
Right?
Consiglieries and all that kind of stuff. What did you think? So you mentioned some of the big problems with it. You know, attempted rape, lots of violence, very few people of color, you know, and a lot of, you know, these ideas that are very old school to us.
Uh-huh.
So is it it just doesn't hold up anymore as a film? Like, how does it make you feel to watch it now in 2017?
I mean, honestly, I feel like it's just a waste of time to watch a bunch of, like, white dudes have issues with each other. I do. I didn't have time for it at the end of the day.
It's a formidable runtime, and how many times has that story been told?
Right.
Like, literally hundreds.
Now, Kayla, have you seen The Godfather?
I have also never seen The Godfather, yeah. So I am in the, I didn't even know about a horse head. Like, to Ruby, grew up in a house with, there was a physical television, but we never had any channels or anything, and we had a few VHSs that I would watch over and over and over and over and over again. So I have seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang like 1,000 times.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
It's also a scary movie. So
you were going to watch The Shining this week?
Yeah.
Yeah. My girlfriend is a huge horror fan and like really wants me to get
into The Shining.
The horror.
Yeah.
And I'm horrified. I can't do it.
Into the horror.
Yeah. So I've also never seen The Godfather and also have no idea what it's about.
Wow. So, I mean, and that's the thing. It's, there's so many movies that we consider to be part of the great, you call it the canon of cinema. And I think a lot of people are afraid to reconsider The Godfather because it is like, oh, you don't like The Godfather? What do you mean you don't like? I've got the poster up on my bar, you know, in my man cave.
Marlon Brando.
Yeah, Marlon Brando. I have to know, what did you think of Marlon Brando as the titular Godfather?
I mean, I got a weird crush on him,
Yeah.
In general. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love him with the cat.
Like, itching of the face and the... Oh, my God. The cat?
Yeah.
That was my favorite part. That and the leave the gun, take the cannolis. That's
yeah.
There you go.
Fun fact about the cat. He actually just... That was not supposed to be, like, going on. He just found that cat.
Oh, my God.
He just found this kitten, and he's just like, come with me, kitten. I'm, you know...
Gonna
I'm
make
the godfather.
Yeah, gonna make you a movie star.
Like, yeah.
Talking about... planning a murder while I'm touching. I mean, that was important to have like a little bit of tenderness in this dude from the get-go, humanized a little bit.
So
his voice and his face. I mean, the character was incredible. What he was doing.
Yeah,
but a whole lot of squinting, a whole lot of frowning,
a whole lot of yes, very.
They actually
flat
put. They put cotton balls.
I wish you could
balls.
See what Ruby looks
they
like.
They put
right
cotton
now.
Balls.
Yeah, they put cotton balls in his mouth to get the thing. Get you know, the, sound like an Italian man.
That was pretty good. I cannot do
my grandfather's Italian, so that's kind of what he sounds like.
Yeah,
yeah, off the boat. So, I mean, just to bring that perspective into, I've always thought The Godfather was super interesting for that first. The whole wedding scene.
Yeah.
Because it does capture that the Italian community, especially at that time, still being considered being considered really low on the social ladder when it comes to ethnicities in that time in America. So I always appreciated that. And when it comes to all the horrifying stuff, I'm always teetering between I disagree with this because it is bad. Like, these are bad things that they're talking very frankly about. Murder, rape, like some pretty bad stuff. The treatment of women in this movie is horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know how far you got into it with I think the character Carlo Rizzi and Michael Corleone's sister.
Oh, yeah. That's domestic violence.
Yeah.
Fucking terrifying.
But I also teeter on this idea. I was like, well, would it be wrong to not say that stuff happened in the 1940s, 1950s?
Right.
So, but I want to say no because it's so hard to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I think it so depends on how things are shot,
right,
and how they're treated. Like, I think that it can be important to show some realistic parts about what life has been at different points in time. But also, I think that excuse is used a lot. When they're not showing other realistic parts, they're just like choosing to show this one realistic part.
Right. And if it's not explicitly, I don't know. Like when I was watching Mad Men, I went back and forth between that too, where I was like, is this a good like narrative entry into problematic realities of a certain time period?
But it's not dealt with
or,
at all. So.
Right. Or is this like a nostalgic thing for a time when that was like considered more okay.
Yeah. Are they making Betty Draper just like a punching bag for all of life's problems?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it's not coming across as very timely anymore, because of it's just a very dispassionate approach and they just sort of feel like they're going through the motions, you know? There doesn't maybe seem anything particularly unique about what they're going through. They've done this before and they'll do it again. You kind of get that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Right. Using the female characters as just a means to show the horrors of humanity when it's really just the horrors of men in this
right.
case.
Yeah. Right. You don't get to see her story arc before that and
no.
after that. You just see like what happens to the men
yeah.
surrounding that.
Right. And that's not realistic. Like
no.
in real life, you would follow both narratives or like these two humans come to this point and like have stories behind all of their actions and whatever.
Right.
And that's why like the realism thing, I feel like, is always a feeble excuse about portraying rape.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, for Ruby, then no Godfather going forward. You don't need to go through the rest of the trilogy, then. I'm guessing. We'll just cut it off there.
I'll just watch 30 Rock again.
Bingo. All right. So the Godfather for Ruby. That's a no. That's a reel that we can put back on the shelf. Put it away.
Sorry, everybody.
Hey, the thing. It's like we said earlier. You know, it's good to reconsider these films because time does cause you to look at these things through rose-colored glasses, because I'm sure in the 70s, I mean, as part of the whole New Hollywood movement. You know, this is when George Lucas and Spielberg and Francis Ford Coppola all coming up. They're like, yeah, we're going to do things. We're going to be, you know, edgy and different and do things that are a little bit more visceral, which at the time was extremely important because they were getting away from old Hollywood and doing something a little bit more true to life. But then now it's like, okay, how excessive was it? How much was it just the male bravado trying to come through in film? Mm-hmm. So don't feel bad about not liking The Godfather. I guarantee you're not the only person in the world that doesn't like The Godfather.
And you're saving me from it. I mean, I was like, maybe I should watch it, but now I don't think I will.
But let's get over to Kayla. You watched a very famous documentary, Grey Gardens.
Yeah.
And you had never seen, had you heard of it before?
I'd heard of it, and I'd been shown a clip, and I think like at some point I'd also seen one of the other scenes was familiar to me. And I'd heard of it, and the way that it was always introduced to me was kind of like, it's really weird and intense. And also I felt like it was always introduced with like an edge of humor. Like it's kind of a funny thing to see. And I did not feel like it was funny at all. Yeah, but I would keep it on the classics. I thought it was pretty incredible. It made me feel just lots of things. It made me want to clean my apartment like 10,000 times. And it made me feel really sad about even like now, also how there's just like not support systems for aging people, there's just not support systems in our society, and especially it looks like to some extent not in the aristocracy, although they did have food delivered to them, so I don't know. It made me feel a lot of things.
Yeah. And for those listening who have not heard of Grey Gardens or really only got the surface level thing, it does deal with Jackie Kennedy, Jackie Onassis, Jackie Bouvier, one of her aunts and one of her cousins living in a kind of a decrepit house in East Hampton.
But it's
East
a
Hampton.
Manor. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a estate. Manor. It's a decrepit estate. And it is an interesting look, as you said, about like the aristocracy and like what happens when you get left behind by your more famous, relatives. Now, Connor, speaking to that idea, I like that idea that people come to it, they think there's a level of humor to it.
Right.
Because have you ever watched Documentary Now with Bill Hader and Fred Armisen?
No, should I?
Well, the first episode of it is it's a satirical, they make fun of famous documentaries. The first episode is they send up Grey Gardens, and it follows Bill Hader and Fred Armisen both playing women living in, it's literally that setup.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they bring the humor through it. Yeah. But I do kind of maybe want to come back to that idea of you're supposed to watch it with maybe a comedic eye, but at the heart of it is it's kind of a horror story. And that's what Fred Armisen and Bill Hader highlight by the end of the episode.
Interesting.
Is that it's like a comedy, clearly, because they're like raccoons running through the house. There's like, you're not supposed to feed the vermin or whatever, but Fred Armisen is just like feeding the raccoon chips, so it keeps coming back.
Yeah.
And so it's supposed to be funny, but at the heart of it, I mean, these people there's a element of mental illness here, right?
Yeah.
And that was actually my introduction to the film. Yeah. I had never heard of it before that.
Really?
Which is weird.
Yeah.
It's an odd introduction to it, but
yeah. Something I was also thinking about a lot watching it was, and maybe I tend to blame things on aristocracy, but like just like what like growing up with this in this way can do to someone. To me, it felt like the way that they'd both grown up with this certain level of the ways that you should be, and like listening to your mother and not listening to your mother, and just like all of these like behavioral constraints and also privileges, created these two people, these two characters, in a way that I think like has a lot to blame for where they were at.
And the bizarre sense of comedy is undercut eventually. I think when you first engage with it, there is that kind of bizarre, like, oh, who are these old ladies, like, living in this weird house, you know, dressed very strange. One constantly has a, it's the two Ediths, the two Edies.
Yeah, they're they have the same name.
Yeah. Big Edie and Little Edie.
Yeah, Big Edie and Little Edie. And you're just kind of like, oh, this is so bizarre. What a strange thing. And then as you go on, I think what made the film such a success and what made it such a legendary documentary is that eventually you start to feel really bad and you're just like, wait, these are just regular people who are more or less victims of circumstance. They got left behind and no one wanted to support them anymore and they didn't really know how to live their lives. Mm-hmm. Connor, you mentioned off air that it is kept in the Library of Congress.
Yeah, it's preserved in the Library of Congress, deemed culturally significant. And I think when you're watching it, you might maybe even call that into question, but they are cousins and aunts of Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah.
So that's probably a thing that colored that decision.
And I think even now, as a work in the documentary filmmaking canon, I would say it's almost essential viewing if you want to get into documentaries or that. Because it feels like a lot of modern documentaries do. There's a lot of like the kind of no narration from the documentarian, just showing literally what's happening. You get a little bit of that in some documentaries. So it kind of helped invent a style.
Yeah, you're sort of expecting an arc, and there isn't really an arc. Mm-hmm. There's just this sort of like keeps going. And I do think it was pretty revolutionary for showing the filmmakers. Like they filmed themselves in the mirror a couple times, and they're pretty explicit about their role, which I think was sort of new at the time, which now a lot of documentary, I mean, I think that's sort of like what all documentaries should be doing. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because it's such a story of exploitation, and then to have documentary, which is like already a pretty exploitative medium, be ever present. And like there's this one scene, it does make you just feel so weird. Like there's this one scene where Big Edie gets up and like her shirt falls down and you see her exposed breasts, and the camera does pan away, but doesn't pan away that quickly. And
yeah,
I just like really it shows this realism, sort of opposite of The Godfather.
Yeah,
it's pretty brutal to watch, and I feel like calls into question. I don't know.
It's like this weird line that they're walking between documentary and like voyeurism.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like you're kind of, I don't know. It does make you feel, that's the only really the way you can put it, is it makes you feel weird that you're watching this.
You don't come away with it with a sense that it's just like good for a few yucks.
Yeah.
You
know? No.
It is.
No.
It is a very good film. It's a very challenging film in terms of when you think of the bones of it. And as you mentioned, Kayla, that it shows the documentarians. Is that modernist or postmodern? I don't know where you like where you show the thing that
you're
making. The means of production, as they say. You know, you get to see who's making the documentary, and I guess that leads to what Michael Moore running up and asking people questions and like
scaring
them.
Where we got.
That's where we are. That's where we are now.
Grey Gardens
to now
Fahrenheit 9/11. But yeah, that's. Thank you so much for both of you watching these films.
Yeah, thank you for challenging us to do it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's sometimes it's weird to cross that threshold and be like, you know, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about, you know, some people are like, what? You're just watching a movie. I'm like, yeah, but you're like, you're finally crossing over and saying, I am going to watch this movie and I'm going to find out what the like cultural significance is all about, and I'll, you know,
that's,
and challenge
like,
that.
Yeah, you know. Crossing a threshold.
Yeah, cross the threshold. So that's our first edition of Missing Reels. Hopefully we'll do another one again because
keep it up. I like it.
Yeah, it's very cool. So that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much again to Ruby and Kayla. They are the creators of Afternoon Snatch, which you can watch on Open TV. The website for that is weareopen.tv. Where else can they find out more about what you are both up to, or anything where can they find more about Afternoon Snatch?
Afternoon Snatch. So we have a, to be honest, kind of dormant Facebook and Instagram, but we do have an Afternoon Snatch Facebook and Instagram that you should go to. Check out our great, like, production pics that are adorable. And otherwise, I think we're going to be putting it on YouTube pretty soon. Right now it's on Vimeo. And so, yeah, that's where you learn about Afternoon Snatch. Open TV. I mean, I would just say just, like, go to Open TV, learn about Afternoon Snatch, and learn about all of the other incredible shows and watch them all because they're so stellar and so important. And, yeah, what TV should be looking like.
Let's hope so. We can only hope that TV can be as good as what as Afternoon Snatch.
Oh so. My God!
They're starting to get mad at us here.
Oh, I'm quit my day job tomorrow.
I finally did it. I pissed them off by complimenting them. We've arrived. Done. We made it. The seminal episode of No Concept.
We're here, baby. We're in Hollywood. All right. So again, Ruby Western and Kayla Ginsberg, creators of Afternoon Snatch. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And
educating us.
Yeah, educating us. I hope you had a good time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Yeah,
thank you.
It was awesome.
Thank you, Connor, for joining me, as always.
Thank you, Tom.
Even though I hate your guts.
Yeah, we're working through that.
Yeah, we've actually hired a special, you know,
a couples counselor, because I yeah. suggested. It's great. Yeah.
This is Patricia, our in-house therapist.
She just kind of sits.
She's She's enjoying the view, I think.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't? All right. This has been No Coast Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. We will see you next time. We are on every single Monday talking about film, talking about the people who are making film here in the city. If you want to find out more about the show, head on over to facebook.com/NoCoastCinemaPodcast. There you can find all of our episodes and keep up to date with what we're doing. You can see some pictures from all the recordings. And soon we will be on iTunes and the WGM Plus app. So stick around. Keep an eye open for that.
Again, and a sharp ear.
Yeah, a sharp ear to the floor. I want you to cut up the floor with that sharp ear. Okay. No Coast Cinema. Good morning, good evening, and good night.